Hey, everybody, welcome to another edition of Deep Fat Fried.
Babe, everybody, welcome to be. What do you guys think about doing, instead of doing a commentary of the fucking debate coming up, we just do the silent thing that we're talking about?
No, we're not doing that.
Come on, the silent thing.
The sound.
You can do that.
Hello, darkness, my old friend.
We could do that if we played
over
the
DNC again.
No. This week, guys, we're not doing Flash Fried like normal. We're going to be doing the our debate coverage.
Yes.
We'll probably have to stream it somewhere else. I don't know where we're going to do that yet. Probably not Vimeo because that sucked last time. Maybe we'll set up something else.
The very least, we'll record our reactions to it and put it up.
It might be where we record it and then put it up afterwards. That might actually be the best for us. I don't know.
Because last time CNN gave us a copyright strike.
No,
thanks, CNN.
It's not CNN doing it this time, so maybe whoever does it now is less litigious. We'll find out, I guess.
I'm sure ABC will be very understanding.
ABC loves it. I don't know what we're going to do, but we're going to put it out there for you one way or the other. It'll be happening, and you can stay tuned for that. But obviously that's happening Thursday, so stay tuned for that Thursday.
Stay tuned.
Let's watch Dune.
We were just talking in the pre-post show about the meetup that we did in New Orleans, which was a huge success. And if you're a $10 patron, you can hear all about our behind-the-scenes stories about all the stuff that was going on that you didn't get to see even if you were there.
Yep, a lot of fun stuff happened.
A lot of crazy stuff, a lot of fun stuff, a lot of fucking weird stuff. A
lot of fucking weirdos.
A lot of fucking pieces of degenerate shit.
I mean, we three are weirdos, so.
Absolutely.
Not I.
Not Scotty.
The people that
Scotty.
Come
I'm fucking normal as shit,
Scotty's
Paul.
Scotty's the weirdest one here.
Yep.
How can you say that about me, Paul? It's like you don't even know me.
Let's do a little Teespring push, I guess.
Teespring push. Teespring.
That's some new sex position.
The Teespring.
Ooh, try the new Teespring push.
That's where you spring out of bed with your T-shirt on.
Yeah,
is that
so
like the
good.
Pogo?
So we have a DFF store down below. We got a lot of cool shit.
Yes, we do. These posters sold like hotcakes at the meetup.
Yes,
they're fucking awesome.
We were selling these at the meetup, and I signed quite a few of this particular shirt, so I know people are buying this shirt. And it looked really great.
We actually saw one of the posters, too. The posters actually look really awesome as well. I was really super impressed.
Yeah,
with
we were signing posters. We were signing shirts. I signed
titties. Signing ass.
Did you sign any ball sacks, Paul?
One dude did ask. And I was like, fuck. All right, dude. Let's step back here. I'll sign your nuts. You got to stay. And he was like, dude, I'm kidding. I was like, thank God.
Because you did say you'd do it.
Yeah, but no, not a single other person. I guess word spread that. You know, somebody had burned the chance, so.
Yeah, maybe.
Wow, that kind of worked out for you.
Yeah, it really did.
Oh, man, we just got these magnets in, too. They look pretty good. Got stickers, got fucking all kinds
of
shit.
Got a mug that you can drink.
I guess the magnets aren't for sale on
dude,
here.
Dude, you can drink baleen whale jizz out of that mug. Did you know that, TJ?
Wow.
You can drink anything, any liquid you want out of that mug.
But specifically, I looked into this, and baleen whale jizz will not harm this mug. You can fill it to the brim.
Wow.
With baleen whale jizz. So
baleen whale jizz.
And guzzle the entire cup while squealing like a little piggy, and
awesome. Nothing
will happen to the mug.
And for some reason, the Fat Sputin shirt's still on sale.
Hey, whatever.
Hey,
I guess
Fat
people
Sputin.
Are still buying it.
I signed a one Fat Sputin shirt at the meetup, so somebody out there had one.
Somebody wants it.
Somebody had it.
I saw
that. Where the fuck's our logo shirt? I don't even see that. Oh, well.
Logo shirt to return soon, I guess.
We don't know where that is. It should come back shortly. But we got shirts on sale. Check it out in the link below. It's pretty cool shit, especially this one. This one looks really great in person.
Yeah.
I've seen it. It looks fucking awesome. I signed the fucking my man tits on it like 100 times.
Yeah, I signed my battle ball like 100 times. It was awesome. And my gut there, too.
Yeah, awesome shit.
I signed my gut.
So anyway, that's just that little bit of shilling for you.
Shilly willy.
Shill.
Shilly willy.
So anybody have any other banter ideas?
Yeah, let's talk about how if you buy one of our mugs, you can literally drink a cup of baleen whale semen.
Why do you want to do that, Paul?
What do you mean, why do I want to do that? Why don't you?
I don't know.
It's delicious.
Where do I get the baleen
whale? What the fuck
whale
is a baleen whale?
A baleen whale is a whale that has teeth, but they're not used to bite. They're used to strain krill out of the water.
Okay.
So they're filter feeders, TJ.
I see.
It's a baleen whale.
But where do I get the jizz is what I'm asking.
You go...
I mean, I gotta get it.
You
from?
Get your fucking hand out, and you go swim out in the middle of the ocean when they're spawning and their dicks are all out because they're looking for a female, and you do the business.
Damn,
you give them the business. You give them
really
a hand jibber.
Can't
you give them a
it?
Whale hand jibber. You collect some semen and you drink it.
So you can't go down to like a 7-Eleven and just buy the shit.
Of course not.
Well, damn, Paul. I mean, I'm fucking pretty lazy. I don't know if I'm actually going to make it to the.
I'm just telling you that, like, if you want
to Pacific Ocean to fucking jerk off a whale, I don't know
if I'm
going to make it.
If you want to taste the best, you got to pass the test, Scotty. That means going to where the fucking whale jizz is fresh.
Well, can I at least sample some of your baleen whale jizz?
Hell no. Every drop of that whale jizz is mine when I go do this once.
Well, can I at least watch you drink it?
Sure.
All right. Well,
I'll bring my next cup over.
All right. Fair enough, man.
Baleen whale jizz.
In our mug.
Out of a DFF mug. What could be better? What could be
nothing.
Greater?
I don't know.
Maybe if you go back in time and get some dodo jizz, dude.
That would be tasty.
That would be fucking amazing,
they're
dude.
They're gone now.
I mean, we can't. So imagine that you came back. You're like, I have dodo jizz. You can't
I guess
even
I'll
buy
just
this.
Put it back on the screen. You know, this is the very mug.
This is from an extinct animal. It's probably more valuable.
Carved from a fucking tusk of an extinct woolly rhinoceros, aka ceramic.
I don't think it's actually carved.
aka ceramic.
Gotcha.
As long as you put the aka, you're fine, TJ. Nobody can sue you.
Also right. Known as ceramic.
Yeah, it doesn't actually say the material, but whatever. It's probably typical
coffee
cup material.
I have one of these, so I can actually bring it next time, Paul, so you actually can fill it with your baleen whale juice.
Okay. Excellent.
I know I'm not allowed to have any. I mean, maybe they'll
not unless you're willing to pass the test. You got to go out in the ocean. Stroke the big whale dick.
I'll get on it.
Oh, yeah, you're going to get on it.
Let me tell you
one thing. That baleen whale dick does not fit in your hand, Scotty. You're going to have to get on it.
Damn, dude.
You got to collect. But I'm telling you, the end result, the most frothy, delicious beverage you'll ever fucking drink, man. Think butter beer in the Harry Potter universe.
It's ambrosia, man.
10 times better than butter beer, dude.
Whoa, is Sarah Palin getting divorced?
Is she?
That's what it says.
Cool.
Todd Palin files for divorce from former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin.
Oh, the family values candidate's family is breaking up, and daughter has, like, two illegitimate children. Crazy.
Here's why. An incompatibility of temperament between the parties, such that they find it impossible to live together as husband and
that's
wife.
That's the standard boilerplate,
so basically,
irreconcilable differences answer.
Basically, we hate each other's guts, is what that means.
We will remain friends. That never speak to each other ever.
Who cares? Fuck Sarah Palin.
I don't know. I just thought it was a neat little piece of trivia.
No, it is, actually. You know, to know that one of these champions of the family life that all these moms looked up to for all this time just kind of quietly gets to get a divorce now.
Yeah.
Isn't that great?
Well, it's American politics. It's just filled to the brim with hypocrisy, so.
Do you think I should talk? Do you want to banter here about my new positions, TJ?
Oh, yeah. Tell everyone about your new positions. Bro.
Well, I've been accused in the past of being kind of fucking like a Stonewall guy.
Uh-huh.
When it comes to my positions, doubling down a lot.
Yeah.
Not being willing to change my mind.
You need to start being more open-minded, Paul.
The DFF subreddit has changed my mind, TJ.
Oh, has it?
They've been roasting me about my position on Bernie. They've been roasting me about my position on Tulsi. And I got to say, I love Bernie now, and I love Tulsi now.
Wow. They roasted you so hard, you changed your positions.
I thought about it, and I thought, you know what? I'm wrong, and they're right. And everything that I said about Bernie and Tulsi, it was wrong. And now I support Bernie. So what do you think about that, TJ?
I think it's great.
I'm on your side.
I think it's wonderful.
I'm feeling the burn.
Feeling the burn, finally.
I'm burning for you.
So, there you go.
I mean, and people said subreddits don't change the world. Looks like they've changed the world one.
You know what?
DFF
changed my heart.
So, I saw the DFF subreddit, too, complaining about your last episode, Paul.
My last episode?
What?
Yeah, your deformities episode. Remember that?
What were they saying about that?
Too short, Paul.
The rapper?
Too short.
Oh. Too in length?
Yeah.
How short was it?
It was about an hour and 10 minutes or something like that.
Well, within the bounds of an episode,
they think it should be that should have been like 2 or 3 hours.
Well, I actually heard 6 hours.
3 hours?
Yeah,
6 hours now, Paul. We want a 6-hour.
Dude, that's
show
the length of the tour that the people on Gilligan's Island were supposed to take. You guys really want to take a 3-hour tour of just like hideous, deformed
Yes.
People?
Apparently so.
We actually want 6
And
hours
I was telling
tall.
Them, like, I'm actually thinking about shortening the length of the show. And they're like...
Oh, I bet that went over well.
Oh, it went over so well, Paul. Did it? They loved it.
They were in the
They were like, you
dancing.
Know what? I wanted longer shows, and you're telling me you want to give me shorter shows? I think that's a fucking brilliant idea, TJ.
And I commend you.
I like the cut of your jib.
That's exactly how it went.
And everyone parted as friends.
Well, they convinced me, you know.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever really gone to the DFF subreddit.
Why not, dude? They're over there convincing people.
You know, I don't know, man.
It changed Paul's life. Changed his whole opinion on shit,
dude. I now believe in the electoral system. I believe in...
Tell him about your newfound love of voting, Paul.
I love voting now. I love, like, the gamble of it. Like, when I go to vote, that it might actually be counted for the other guy or not counted at all. Like, that makes it all the better as an institution for me now.
Well, of course.
I just started looking at it that way, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? And I absolutely love voting now. I'm totally going to vote.
As you should.
100% of the time. All the time. All my criticisms previously of the system of voting are null and void at this point. The stamp of disapproval is upon them, and I'm definitely a voter now.
Yeah, dude. And check that out. This is the one I was talking about. This is on our subreddit. DFF is short as shit.
Short as shit?
There's definitely a lot more we could have covered on this. Then why didn't you, lazy-ass motherfuckers? I'm not going back to DP, but maybe try doing a 2-hour show once in a while. Poor product, poor buffet. If it's a poor product, why do you want more of it?
Yeah, why are you bitching for a second helping?
I hate it! Give me more!
This fucking chicken was cold and burnt! I don't want it!
Cold
Jeez
and burnt.
Louise, man.
And there wasn't nearly enough.
There's a lot of angst going on the internet.
I'm mad.
You guys noticed, like, it's angsty everywhere right now.
I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore.
ContraPoints got bullied off of Twitter by her own people.
Mm-hmm.
They rose up against her and kicked her off of Twitter.
And then I was telling the fans, what the fuck do I say this guy? It was,
We got to hear TJ's sick burn.
I didn't really burn him. I'm just like.
You didn't burn him.
If we made shows as long as some topics demand, they'd be 20 hours long for some topics. I'm thinking serious about cutting these shows' lengths down. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So then TJ, not to be a dick, but you're acting like a total cunt in this thread. Everyone wants longer shows. At least try to listen to your fans and not argue.
Have you ever responded positively to somebody giving you a directive like that?
And I said to him, I think you want better shows, not just pointlessly longer ones. And he's like, rather than tell the fans what they want, why not listen to the fans when they tell you what they want?
Because
I know better, faggot.
Yeah.
I got to be honest with you, and this is something that a lot of people don't like to hear, but the fans don't know what they want. It's the job of the entertainer to give them what they want.
Precisely.
And I'm not trying to say that we never listen to our fans, but coming at me like you're my fucking dad like that, and you do this right now, you're never going to get traction with anybody on this fucking panel.
You're representative of your point of view, and if that's how you feel it shows to be longer, that's fine. But I always take this thing, too, where it's like it's a monolith. Like, I represent all fans when I say it's like you represent you. That's fine. If you want to say it, me as a fan, this
is what
I want.
The vast majority of our fans never interact with our property in any way other than just adding one to the view count. That's just the truth.
Yeah.
The people that actually fucking... like are a small minority amongst the people that watch. The people that actually leave a comment are a small minority amongst the total people.
As with
that watch.
Anything,
the people that
any
engage
show.
In our social media sites are a small minority.
Tiny.
In comparison to the people that watch. And that's the truth.
You're just a bunch of mouthy bastards love hearing yourselves talk.
That's true. That is
so
true.
I actually kind of like it over there. It's fun arguing with them and shit.
Oh, yeah, I love it. I love when they downvote me and they think, like, I'm...
Enough of the fucking... That we're not here tonight to talk about the... If you want to deep out this subreddit, that could be your fucking next episode.
All right, let's
do it.
My next episode is actually...
I thought this was the most evil corporations ever. Reddit.
Unfortunately, they're pretty low on that list.
They didn't make the cut.
All right, TJ.
They didn't make the cut.
Would you like to fucking run your mouth here to read this quote by Oscar Wilde?
We are each our own devil, and we make this world our hell. Oscar Wilde.
Dun, 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 dun. Bah! I like it.
So we started off with this episode, and I kind of thought about this. I'm like, you know, most evil corporations. And I kind of thought, like, well, what the fuck is even evil? We kind of need to define evil a little bit better.
What is evil anyway?
What is fucking evil anyway?
Maybe you can convince me, Scotty, because I got to be honest with you. I don't really even believe in the concept of evil.
Well, that's fine, because we're actually going to look at it from two different points of view, at
least.
That's
awesome.
Without evil, there can be no good, so it must be good to be evil sometimes.
Maybe. So here's the definition of evil. Evil, in a general sense, is the opposite or absence of good, which is kind of, I thought, very vague. It can be extremely broad, broad concept. Though in everyday usage is often used more narrowly to denote profound wickedness. You know, like, that was evil what they did. They shot, the guy shot that kid, he's an evil fuck. You know, something like that, which is an example of a moral evil.
Right.
But it is generally seen as taking multiple possible forms, such as the more of a personal moral evil, which we just talked about, like shooting someone in the head or fucking robbing or stealing, which is commonly associated with that word, you know, or impersonal natural evil, you know, a hurricane, a tidal wave fucking killed everyone. It's not something that's necessarily, you know, as an evil directive, but it is acting as most humans would consider an evil sort of thing.
So basically,
I don't think a storm is evil fucking at all, dude. There's
some
no
people do,
thing.
Though. Of course, in religious thought, you know, that's the form of demonic, or so Satan, the devil, you know.
Now, that evil I do believe.
A lot of times they say that
the
God sent
evil.
The storm, though, too, so.
Yeah, God said he creates the darkness and the light, good and evil. He the Lord your God,
it's all
creates
good.
These things.
And that's a whole other thing. The theological discussion about evil, we'd be here all night, basically.
That's why I don't believe
it. Well,
that's
what the fans want, so fucking pull up a chair.
I didn't cover
10-hour show on the concept of evil.
Well, if they vote that or something, there's some sort of mechanism.
If the patrons want that, I'll do it.
Yeah, something like that happens, and sure. It is important to note that there are at least two concepts of evil, a broad concept and a narrow concept. The broad concept picks out any bad state of affairs, wrongful action, or character flaw. So an example here is like a toothache is an evil in a broad sense, as is a white lie. Okay, and then evil in a broad sense has been divided into two categories, natural evil and moral evil. Natural evils are bad states of affairs which do not result from intentions or negligence of moral agents. Hurricanes and toothaches are examples of natural evils. Something's just going to occur naturally.
Got it.
By contrast, moral evils do result from the intentions or negligence of moral agents. So murder, you know, the Holocaust, shit like that. Now, it can be even subdivided further as in institutions and stuff. But I said we want to keep this, you know, relatively... Keep it simple. Simple sometimes better, TJ.
So, like when people talk about evil, really what they talk about is stuff that's like a hindrance to human beings in some way, or an inconvenience, or an imposition,
well,
or something that causes
some
sort of suffering of some kind.
Intention seems to be important when you're denoting evil. Like
that's why everyone freaks out when you compare car crashes to terrorist attacks. It's like, well, no one intended a car crash. It's like, well, people are just as dead.
Well,
so.
There's people that do intend car crashes, but yeah, but
well, you know, but
obviously
you know
the vast
I mean.
Majority they don't intend to do.
Like when someone dies in an accident, for some reason, people don't feel as much of an onus to fix what caused the accident as they do when there's actually like a consciousness or an agent involved
as
willingly
like a moral
hurt
agent, yeah, that's going out and saying, I'm going to suicide bomb and kill all these people,
right. So, you know, 10 people die in a fucking random bus crash, no one gives a shit. 10 people die in a terrorist attack on a bus, and all of a sudden it's like a totally different level because someone intended it. Even
is it bad
it
that
really...
I don't give a shit in either case?
No, because I don't either.
Okay.
Maybe we're just both awful.
I'm just numb to it at this point.
Yeah,
sorry.
I mean, like, you know, there's six...
I grew up watching the news, and that's all
they
covered.
How many
was...
billions of people are there now? We're supposed to fucking 10?
There's 9.5, something like that.
Nine
and a half people, at least.
Let's nine see. And a half. How many billion people are in the world? It was 6 billion back in the 90s, right?
World population is about 7.5 billion.
So
right
7.5 billion.
7.5 billion.
Well, as of 2017, so it's probably higher by now.
So
it's probably a good 8 billion.
Oh, it's 7.7 billion right now.
I think you and TJ will like the next section. So pull up that picture, TJ, the next picture we have. Well, that was when we were talking about evil. Go to the next one, actually.
The Umbrella Corporation.
No, it's not that one.
God
it's
damn it.
Yes, here we go. TJ, I think you know who this is.
Yeah, that's fucking,
you used to call him Nietzsche.
That's Mark Twain, dude.
Mark Twain, no.
That's Fried Rich Nietzsche, dude.
Yeah,
Fried Rich Nietzsche, oh yeah, he's my favorite philosopher.
Yeah, he used to call Nietzsche, Nietzsche, for some reason.
Nietzsche?
He's like, Nietzsche.
Because there was no internet to look up how to pronounce this shit.
TJ is bad with pronunciations, too.
Yes.
Especially
I am as
weird
well.
Names. I'm not great.
But yeah, this is Nietzsche, I think, is probably the closest you could say it in English. I
know. Nietzsche.
People who are German
So
Friedrich Nietzsche.
Friedrich Nietzsche.
I wish I could have that mustache, man.
Nietzsche obviously argues the concept of evil. He said that the concept of evil should be abandoned because it's dangerous. Nietzsche believes that the concept of evil is dangerous because it has a negative effect on human potential and vitality by promoting the weak in spirit and suppressing the strong. In On the Genealogy of Morality, a polemic, Nietzsche argues that the concept of evil arose from negative emotions of envy, hatred, and resentment. He contends that the powerless and weak created the concept of evil to take revenge against the oppressors. Nietzsche believes that the concepts of good and evil contribute to an unhealthy view of life, which judges relief from suffering as more valuable than creative expression and accomplishment. For this reason, Nietzsche believes that we should seek to move beyond judgments of good and evil. Right. So he thinks, he's like, let's do away with this Judeo-Christian view of good and evil. Let's just fucking, it's holding humanity back.
I don't know if I agree for the same reasons that Nietzsche lays out, but I definitely agree in that.
Well,
I think that
why do you agree?
I think that having the
you have to look at it from the context of Nietzsche writing a lot of this stuff as a response to Christianity.
Of course.
Because Christianity in his worldview coddles, you know, even it says the meek will inherit the earth and... You know, it's a very he considered it a slave morality because it's a very like, a morality that's kind of based around those who have are bad and those who have not are good
and those who have not are going to get their just rewards when they go to heaven.
The people who were poor and indigent and shit as being envious of the rich and the powerful, of course.
You know, we covered Jeffrey Dahmer
right
here. And he was a dude that was labeled as evil by a lot of people.
Right.
And I'm not saying he isn't. Maybe the concept of evil, you know, does exist in some form. Maybe I'm wrong. But to me, it just seems a gross simplification of a complex character.
Right.
And it's harder
work. It's just an easy label to slap on somebody who's done heinous
things. And that's why I don't
like
it.
Oh, well, they're just evil.
It's like any other label to me at this point. You know what I mean? It's something that just reduces an entire person or an entire group of people to a vague notion that everybody just accepts. I don't like that about it. And I don't know that that lines up with Nietzsche's philosophical problems with it, but...
Not quite.
No, definitely not. But I would say
you're coming to a similar place from two different roads.
And basically. That happens quite often in philosophy. So there are, of course, arguments for the concept of evil, so we need evil. So some people believe that we should not abandon the concept of evil because the concept of evil can capture the moral significance of acts, characters, and events such as sadistic torture, serial killers, Hitler, the Holocaust, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
You know, Zhao Dedong, people like that. You know, you might have heard
of that Zhao Dedong.
Yeah.
Zhao Dedong.
A second argument in favor of the concept of evil is that only by facing evil... by becoming clear of its nature and origins, can we hope to prevent future evils from occurring and live good lives?
I mean, that's kind of circular, isn't it?
I guess in a sense.
We got to believe in evil to stop evil.
But yeah, I guess if you look at it from that perspective, that you'd be kind of forced to say that is circular. But the only way you can know evil is to stop it.
I have some questions about the first one, if we can go back for a second.
Oh, yeah, of course we can go back.
So you're saying some people, I'm going to reread this, if that's okay.
Yeah, it's fine.
Some people believe that we should not abandon the concept of evil because only the concept of evil can capture the moral significance of acts, characters, and events. Such as sadistic torture,
like
serial killers, Hitler, and the Holocaust.
It's like saying the Holocaust is bad.
I think our condemnation of those things has never stopped them from happening, first of all.
Sure.
So I don't know how worthy our condemnation of those acts is. I think striving for understanding of why they happen would actually be a more useful fucking pursuit.
Exactly.
Well, also,
second of all, I think we can all make an argument about why these things are against the best interests of human beings without bringing the moral dimension into it.
Well, I mean, look, I think you can actually bring the moral dimension into it without necessarily retreating to the easy road of evil. You can say, as a society, it's a bad thing for people to be, trying to make weird zombie sex slaves of young men.
Right.
There's
very practical, pragmatic arguments you can lay out for why that's bad.
Right. And it shouldn't dominate all of the discussion about the person that perpetrated those acts if you seek to understand that person. And I think evil just gives people a shortcut.
It's like, it's just an excuse to not really fucking understand it, not really do anything about it. You're just saying, oh, well, the answer is evil. It was just evil.
How much do you think your average fucking Joe on the street actually knows about Hitler? I'm not trying to be pro-Hitler.
He's bad.
Very little.
That what they probably know is, oh, he did the bad thing. He killed the Jews.
He was, we fought him in the war. What do they know about the
You know, and I'm not even putting myself in there. I don't know every little fucking political maneuver that led up to Hitler's rise to power. I'm not claiming to have that knowledge. I'm just saying, I don't really find any fucking good in labeling him evil. That doesn't inform anything to me. If I want to know more about Hitler, I go learn something.
A big thing about the Holocaust, too, is that we all said, you know, especially the United States, the United Nations, all these countries came together and said we'd never want genocide again. And we know in countries like North Korea...
There's a pragmatic reason for not allowing genocide.
Of course there is. But I'm saying, like, but even that, in that sense, it didn't stop us. I mean, like, in those other countries where there's a great risk for loss of life or war, people are going to go, I mean, yeah, they're genociding people in countries like North Korea.
Yeah, this big push towards condemnation. Our moral condemnation really doesn't do shit. And people need to fucking realize that it's just a bunch of ineffectual garbage that's designed to make you feel better. But it's not actually helping the problem.
Well, how do you guys feel about
this?
Another reason. A third reason to keep the concept of evil is that categorizing actions and practices as evil helps to focus our limited energy and resources. If the evils are the worst sort of moral wrongs, we should prioritize the reduction of evil over the reduction of other wrongs, such as unjust inequalities.
No, because anybody can label any fucking... like, homosexuality for the longest time. Evil.
Heroin.
It's evil.
Evil.
It's evil.
Like,
it's
since,
evil. It's
since
evil.
Since when did labeling something evil stop people from fucking pursuing it? This is the same argument that fucking pro-death penalty people make when they say that it keeps people from committing these crimes.
Obviously not. Murder rates
so
fucking held
labeling
steady.
Labeling something evil, you got to understand there's a certain segment of society that completely ignores that, and there's a certain segment of society that seeks that out because you labeled it evil.
And not only that, but... you can label things that have no real, actual, pragmatic, moral dimension to them at all as evil. This thing is evil because we don't like it.
Well, supposedly,
it challenges the power structure, so it's evil.
Well, that's supposedly, you know, immoral.
And that's what
agent.
Happened with a lot of fucking like the workers' rights things that we were talking about in that one of the our recent episodes on the Red Scare. They labeled communism the ultimate evil. And then everybody who was even talked a little bit about workers' rights was labeled
evil.
A communist. And if communism is evil and all these people are communists, then they must be evil. So workers' rights is evil. So giant evil corporations aren't evil. So it's like, you know, what
well,
is
also,
it really fuck? It can be used as a fucking shield.
When we talk about, like, so we're talking about moral agents, like, so if let's say that most people would agree someone's an immoral agent, they're doing something horrible, like they're a pedophile or whatever. Do most of those people see themselves in such a light? Probably not. You know, so at that same time, it's not going to really prevent that necessarily just
when
by labeling it.
When it comes to heinous shit, labeling it evil adds nothing to understanding why it happened and how to prevent it in the future. And that's the reason it needs to be discarded, period. It's just a way for people to put it in a segment where they don't think about it. They don't want to know why it happened. They don't want to look into how to stop
it. Another excuse not to think, basically.
Yeah.
Read us the fourth reason.
So the fourth reason I pulled up today is that a fourth reason not to abandon the concept of evil is that by categorizing actions and practices as evil, we are better able to set limits to legitimate responses to evil. By having a greater understanding of the nature of evil... we're better able to guard against responding to evil with further evils.
Nebulous language, and how do you get better understanding of the concept of evil? Do I go to your church? Who's doling out that sublime wisdom? And where can I go learn about the actual true singular fucking definition for this totally nebulous word we've spent the last 20 minutes discussing?
I haven't seen... everything in practical reality just refutes this idea that by understanding evil, we avoid evil. Because it's saying, oh, well, we can limit our legitimate responses to evil. Well, you know, oh, Saddam Hussein killed a bunch of his people. Let's go to Iraq and fucking set them free.
Yeah, and stop this evil.
And how many
occurring.
People did we kill? We killed way more than fucking Saddam ever did.
Right.
Or comparable
and
numbers.
To.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's one of those things where it's like you see people so many times use that excuse like we're trying to defend the good and we're trying to make sure that we're doing this to prevent these evils from occurring. But a lot of times in the pursuit of stopping evil, we do the same exact evil actions that we're supposedly there to stop. So, I mean, you know, if you look at morality like that, it's way more ambiguous. It's way more nebulous. It's way harder to determine if this – I mean, that's why I think, you know, people like Nietzsche made arguments like this. And I think that's why people make the arguments today like you guys have made against evil is that – we simply just there's no objective morality to say this is evil and this is not. And until we have such a means by doing that, if we ever do, which we probably won't, then it's too nebulous, it's too vague, it's too subjective to this the person or the or whatever it is, the group, institution, whatever, judging that. Like
you find me, let me. And
well,
let's
think about
too.
This during the Holocaust.
Yeah.
What did people say? What did the fucking German soldiers say at the fucking Nuremberg trials and all that stuff? What did they say afterwards? They said, I was just following orders. They weren't doing some evil action. They were following orders. Someone told me to do it, so therefore I did it.
I'm a soldier. I follow orders. That's what I do.
Yeah. I'm not evil.
Yeah. And, you know, you find me 10 people who believe in objective morality, and I'll show you 10 different fucking moral codes.
Of course.
Because they can't come. There's no consensus on that shit. They all agree that there is an objective morality. They don't agree on what it is. They never will.
Which, in a sense of itself, just proves how subjective that is, and how subjective, and how limited to human perception all of these concepts
and
are.
And even the best book written, probably, on objective morality was The Moral Landscape by Sam Harris. And even he doesn't espouse, hey, this is, I found the correct
this
objective moral system. He only says he thinks it's theoretically possible that that exists. Now, I could take my issues out with that, and I've done it in my book and all that shit, but even that guy that has written probably the most, at least the most popular book on objective morality from a scientific, secular perspective, and even that book doesn't purport to describe what that moral code is. It only says that it may be possible to objectively measure morality.
And I mean, the way
which I still disagree with and think is fucking retarded,
and
by the way.
And the way he talks about it, I mean, there's so much nuance and so many different facets of human philosophy and culture and, you know, the world we live in that you have to be described to even begin to understand his arguments for objective morality, that it's not simply, you can't make it so digestible. It's like, okay, it's just this. It's
the
just
concept of objective morality allows for the reduction of complex issues into little tidbits like good and evil.
You know what I always wondered too? What if there's an objective morality and it's something that humanity finds like universally reprehensible? What if we find finally at long last the objective morality of the universe and it turns out to be the most brutal
survival
Darwinian
of the
thing you've ever
right.
heard of?
Social Darwinism.
And it's just like, you know, whatever you can fucking kill,
yeah,
steal,
cut every throat, step
rape,
on every neck,
whatever
to get
the
what you
fuck,
gotta get.
That's what's good.
Yeah. There's more evidence.
And compassion is weakness, and all. Like, what if it's like super villain morality?
I mean, that's what it is in the animal kingdom.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, and here we are, a bunch of apes trying to think we're fucking separate from that. What if we find that they got it right?
Exactly.
And we should all be at each other's fucking throats.
Is everyone gonna start
establishing
doing that?
Dominance over the fucking herd or whatever the fuck?
I don't believe in objective morality, but I think
it opens
that
the door to that absurdity.
It does. It basically says that there's an idea so good there isn't one better, and I refuse to fucking accept that.
Well, if you look at the concrete nature of reality that we can tell, and if you look at the way humans interact in societies and stuff, like, for the most part, violence has been part and parcel of the human experience and most animals' world experience. So it's hard to argue that if there was objective morality, that would not at least play some role in it. And a lot of people like to think that there'd be, a utopian world, there'd be no violence, there'd be no strife.
That still doesn't imply that we've reached some kind of utopia, though. Maybe behind the scenes, what enforces that
is violence.
Is violence, right.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest, we could talk about this all night.
We really could.
Let's get in to some of the most evil corporations.
Yeah, now that we've established that, let's talk about these evil scum fuck corporations.
Now that we've established evil is bullshit. Here's an evil corporation.
Off with the worst.
Nestle.
Nestle, by
look
the way.
Look at that. It's the mama bird and the two baby birds.
Keep feeding your baby bird. By the way, check it out. Check it out. Check it out.
Ooh.
I got some Nesquik here. The label's been turned off, but.
Turned off?
Turn off.
It turned off to what
label
I'm
doing. Is
that
Yoo-Hoo?
No, that's
no, this is
Nesquik.
Not a Yoo-Hoo. This is a Nesquik. Okay. See, there's a Nestle logo right there.
I got it. Okay. Yeah, I see it. I don't actually, but go ahead.
It's a little blurry.
Yeah. Go drink that.
Play the first video, would you, teacher?
What do you think about that?
Oh, sorry, he's enjoying some Nesquik.
I remember this.
Me too, that's why I pulled it.
Whoa.
So, ripping off the sandlot here.
Your boy's back again? That's the third time this week.
My husband had a mean curve. More Nestle quick?
Chocolate milk? Think quick.
Thanks.
quick.
How was it? Just hope you never have to go in there.
Man, that I loved that Nestle rabbit, dude. I gotta tell you.
You did?
I really did, man.
Why?
Because he always had everybody's back, and you always got chocolate milk at the end of it.
Yeah.
And you know what? He was never deprived of the chocolate milk either. He drank plenty of fucking Nesquik.
Like,
dude.
All of us have helped each other out, you know, and shit. Like, a lot when of these... When did it all end with a big old ice-cold glass of chalky milk?
A lot of these rabbit characters, man. Like, Bugs Bunny is all about being an asshole.
Yeah, he's a troll.
The Trix rabbit is all about, like...
He's a doofus.
...exclusion, and you're not allowed to have this. The Nesquik fucking rabbit, though?
Yeah.
He the has motherfucker's all about sharing his Nesquik with
he's
you.
He's about not only that, he doesn't even have to share his. That's the brilliance of the Nesquik rabbit.
Yeah.
He finds somebody else's quick and gets you some of it.
Hell yeah.
He just busted into that old lady's house and was like, hey, old bitch, we just running from some bullies. Can we get some quick? And she gave it to him because he's a quick rabbit.
How are you going to refuse?
Look at that chain around his neck. That's a pimp.
Dude, why can't there be the weed rabbit? He busts in the drug dealer's house. He gets you. He convinces the drug dealer to smoke you up, and he's all like, yeah, it's for everyone.
Everybody deserves a friend like the quick rabbit, and very few people get one.
Weedy the weed rabbit.
So, TJ, Nestle.
Hey, Paul, I found a fucking, I'm sorry, real quick.
You fucking piece
real
of fucking
Nestle
shit.
Quick.
Real quick. Real Nestle quick.
You know
dude.
What, TJ? Why don't you give Paul some Nesquik, dude? What the fuck, man?
I found the
he
best.
He chugged it.
When I was looking when I was looking for that world population shit, I found the best fucking site for Paul, dude.
What is it?
I want Paul to just stay up at night watching this.
Okay, what is it?
Oh God.
Birthdays today. Oh, going up. Deaths today. Oh, that's
I mean,
slower.
That's actually I mean, it looks to me that like slower than I thought it would be, but it's still really
look, Paul. People are checking out, but they ain't
and I mean, like
out
sometimes it
enough.
Goes down for a second. You see that? That's deaths.
Yep, dead.
But like
dead,
you can just
dead.
See, like there's dead. Oh, but
life is born, winning. Born.
Oh my God.
Life so wins. Births today, 277.
What's the global growth rate, TJ?
161,000.
No, there's actually a thing you can look at.
Population growth today.
No, global growth rate.
Which one?
World population sections.
Oh, global growth rate?
Yeah. Oh, so look there, Paul. It's not bad. Look, it's going down.
The global it's just not going up as
it's
fast.
It's not growing as quick as it used to.
That actually makes me feel better.
It went from
2%. Man, what were they thinking in the 70s?
I don't know.
They were thinking about fucking, dude.
Fuck, everybody was fucking in
the
70s.
Though,
well,
damn.
It's really the 60s were the big boom.
Yeah, I guess they kind of fell off in the 70s.
The
huh?
60s was like, everybody fuck. It's the 60s,
and then look,
everybody.
Look, there's our generation right there, dude. The 90s, the late 80s, everybody was fucking. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Damn, the latest world population.
And then the fucking incels came in the fucking early 2000s and ruined it for everybody.
Everybody.
Now nobody fucking.
Back to Nestle, sorry.
Sorry. Any Nestle's more, responsible for incels.
Any more diversions, TJ?
No.
Any more tangents?
No
you
more,
sure?
No more
sure?
tangents, no more diversions.
So Nestle,
so anyway,
SA,
this one time
is a Swiss multinational food and drink processing conglomerate corporation headquartered in Vevey Vaud, Switzerland. It is the largest food company in the world, measured by revenues and other metrics since 2014. TJ,
long time.
So can you pull the next picture, TJ?
Yeah.
So this is Charles Page in 1866. Charles Page, U.S. consul to Switzerland, and George Page, brothers from Lee County, Illinois, USA. Established the Anglo-Swiss Condensed Milk Company in Cham, Switzerland. Their first British operations were opened in... I can't believe it. Chippenham, Wiltshire.
Oh, my God. Just nuke Britain, please.
Chippenham.
Dude, there's somebody that lives in Chippenham, Wiltshire?
Yes.
Move.
There is. In
Move. Get out of Chippenham.
In Vevey, Henry Nestle developed the milk-based baby food and soon began marketing it. The following year saw Daniel Peter begin 7 years of working perfecting his invention, the chocolate milk manufacturing process.
Milk chocolate manufacturing.
Oh yeah,
process.
The milk. I'm sorry, TJ. The milk chocolate. I was thought it was chocolate milk. I think that was in my brain.
Want chocolate milk?
I do. Nestle was the crucial cooperation that Peter needed to solve the problems of removing all the milk, the water from the milk added to his chocolate, thus preventing the product from developing mildew. So Henry Nestle, you're a genius. Retired in 1875 with the company under new ownership. Retained his name.
But why are they evil, though? They don't sound so
what?
Evil,
they make,
Scotty.
They, well, TJ, they
yeah,
make
you
chocolate.
Figured out how to keep milk
yeah,
from getting moldy. They make chocolate. They have a bunny rabbit that saves everybody and gets some chocolate
I mean,
milk.
Guess they've done. Look at this guy.
Yeah, he seems like a good guy to me.
I mean, he just made
Henri Nestle.
fuck is your problem?
Kept the
bitch.
Fucking chocolate nice and mildew free. Well, I guess they did some other fucked up shit.
Got a pretty cool beard.
So how about baby formula marketing, TJ? Concern about Nestle's aggressive marketing of their breast milk substitutes, particularly in less economically developed countries, first rose in the 1970s. Critics have accused Nestle of discouraging mothers from breastfeeding, suggesting that their baby formula is healthier than breastfeeding, which, of course, is not true, unfortunately.
Prove it.
But it was the baby killer.
Prove it, Scotty.
Just look at the scientific research.
I don't need to look at no research. You got to prove it to me.
I ain't trying to talk to no scientists.
Motherfuckers lying. Getting me pissed.
I have no way to refute that.
Oh, ICP's coming to town, y'all.
We got to go.
October. This
dude,
October,
bring
dude.
Some. Oh, dude, we got to go.
We got to go undercover as juggalos, y'all.
I'm going.
We're
going
to kill.
Dude, I'll whoop. I can already do it all, dude.
Let's
I'm ready
it.
To go.
Better anyway. Bring some Faygo, Paul.
Oh, dude, you know I'm going to bring some Faygo. I'm bringing some moon mist.
But it was The Baby Killer, a booklet published by London's War on Want organization in 1974 that really blew the lid off the baby formula industry. In poverty-stricken cities in Asia, Africa, and Latin America, babies are dying because their mothers bottle feed them with Western-style infant milk, alleged War on Want. So they're saying that basically their moms gave them this shit. That's actually not as good for them. They should just breastfed them. So there's a number of reasons why this happened.
I'm going to guess money.
What?
That's my guess. Going in, it's money.
So this is what Nestle actually did with this. There's a few primary ways of getting people to actually switch from this. They said creating a need where none existed, so they convinced these mothers, hey, this is actually better for the baby.
Mm-hmm.
Convincing consumers the products were indispensable, linking the products with the most desirable and unattainable concepts, and also, of course, giving them a sample. So at the same time, the benefits of breastfeeding were actually being brought to light. Paige Harrigan, a senior nutrition advisor with Save the Child organization.
Lies.
Says, vitamin A prevents blindness and lowers the child's
risk. Paige Harrigan is in the fucking pocket of the big breast industry.
Oh, yeah, that must be it, dude.
Nestle was just trying to help these kids. God damn it.
I'm sure there were. So vitamin A prevents blindness, TJ, lowers the child's risk of death.
What's worth
diseases.
Seeing in this world, I ask you?
Well, zinc might stave off diarrhea, according to the organization's State of the World report. 6 months of exclusive breastfeeding are said to increase a child's chances of survival by 6 times. By 6 times. So feeding them strictly breast milk, 6 times less likely to survive their first year
of
life.
Yeah, well, you know what? That helps with this fucking population
Another
shit,
thing we talked
dude.
About was linking the products with the most desirable and unattainable concepts. Poor women longed to move from a rural to an urban way of life, which prodded them to abandon breastfeeding and turned prime them for marketing, said Warren Watt. As the social position of women changes and they go out to earn a wage, looking at the breast as a cosmetic sex symbol rather than a source of nourishment reinforces that trend.
Don't you just love how even something as probably universally or near universally agreed upon as a good thing, like the empowerment of women... was just another fucking.
Wasn't it with smoking too? Like liberty?
Marketing exploitation. Yeah,
liberty
Paul,
torches?
You like to tell this fucking story. Tell about the Liberty Torches, Paul.
Oh, yeah. So, what was his name? Edward Bernays. He's kind of a marketing guy. Actually, the nephew of fucking. What's his name? The famous ass Freud. Sigmund Freud.
Mm-hmm.
See? And he was the first guy that kind of figured out how to play on people's psychological underpinnings with his marketing. And anyway, he came up with this brilliant fucking idea
to get
women to start smoking. Because at a certain point, smoking cigarettes or cigars was seen as a masculine thing.
And women didn't really...
And women were like, oh, I don't want to do that because that's what boys do. And he was like, how do I do this? And he kind of piggybacked in on the nascent women's rights kind of sexual liberation movement. And got a bunch of women together to walk down fucking whatever this, you know, Central Avenue in Manhattan is, dressed as Lady Liberty and holding
An
their
ancient
cigarettes
prejudice
high.
Has been removed.
And they were passing out pamphlets and stuff that called cigarettes Liberty Torches and that women should cast off this old idea that they're not allowed to smoke. It's a new age. And it worked. They immediately started selling cigarettes to women.
Yeah, they were actually calling them torches of freedom.
Yeah, freedom torches and liberty torches.
Freedom to get cancer.
Yeah, they just kind of started a whole marketing campaign around the idea that smoking was a liberating idea for women at a time when women were really looking towards that socially and gave a bunch of people cancer. It was awesome.
Emphysema, heart disease.
Yeah.
Mm.
So it looks like Lucky...
It's toasted.
Looks like Lucky Strike in particular was like... This is, I mean, look at this. This is the, look how fucking feminist cigarettes are, dude.
Yeah.
Women are free.
Oh, dude.
An ancient prejudice has been removed.
Yeah.
Toasting cigarettes, too, was a big deal. It was like it was going to make it taste so much better.
This was a Bernays special right here. Thank him for this type
of thing. Pioneer of this bullshit.
Yum, yum, yum.
So that sounds all bad, guys. What about some child labor? Ah, that look at that kid's getting strong there.
Yeah, man.
Is that
just
a
helping
sack
this,
of kumquats?
Helping this kid work
that
out.
That is the cocoa plant.
Oh, the cocoa. The cacao?
The cacao. So multiple reports have documented the widespread use of child labor in cocoa production, as well as slavery and child trafficking throughout Western African plantations, on which Nestle and other major chocolate companies rely. Not a big deal. According to the 2010 documentary, The Dark Side of Chocolate, children are usually 12 to 15 years old. The Fair Labor Association has criticized Nestle for not carrying out proper checks, which they don't. So, TJ, I pulled the video. This is from that documentary we just spoke about, The Dark Side of Chocolate.
This is actually the full documentary. So
yeah, go to around 30 minutes. I can lead you precisely when we start seeing the kids working on the plantation.
30 minutes.
Law. 10 to 12.
It's actually 10 to 12. But
none of the children goes to school or can speak the local language.
Yeah, many of these kids come from about 400 or 500 miles away.
According to international labor laws, this is illegal.
What are international labor laws? People want
Nestle don't give a fuck.
People want chocolate. Let's see some more. This is the guy that
made the documentary. We continue our search on other plantations. There are plenty of children here.
And by the way, they don't get to keep any of their money, really. They're basically just slaves.
Of course.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Gotta get stronger.
That Nestle quick, TJ. How did that taste earlier?
Getting strong now.
How'd you like that child slave labor chocolate?
Won't be wrong now.
So a 2016 study published in Fortune magazine concluded that approximately 2.1 million children in several West African countries, quote, still do the dangerous and physically taxing work of harvesting cocoa, noting that the average farmer in Ghana in 2013-14 growing season made just 84 cents per day, and the farmers of the Ivory Coast a mere 50 cents. Well below the World Bank's new $1.90 per day standard for extreme poverty. On the efforts to reduce the issue, a former Secretary General of the Alliance of Cocoa-Producing Countries, Sana Ebay, commented, the best-case scenario, we're only doing 10% of what's needed.
Great.
Oh, and guys, if you think maybe, oh, this documentary was made a few years ago, maybe things have changed.
Nestle's gotten better since then.
In 2019, Nestle announced...
That's this year!
Yep. Nestle announced that they couldn't guarantee that their chocolate products were free from child slave labor.
Oops.
As they could only trace 49% of the purchasing back to the farm level.
Wait.
So essentially they're saying that, yes, it's
we don't even know where half our shit comes from? Okay.
No. The Washington Post noted that the commitment taken in 2001 to eradicate such practices within 4 years had not been kept.
Seems that way.
No, neither shit. At their... So their next deadline was 2005, didn't make it. They revised the deadline in 2008, didn't make it. 2010, they revised it, didn't make it. And the result was not likely to be achieved for 2020 either.
So that's their newest goal.
We're
gonna stop enslaving children real soon.
So
literal
okay.
Child labor.
Where's the fucking Nestle Quick Rabbit to come fucking give
these
kids some...
Yeah, bail these guys out and get them some chalky milk, Nestle
Rabbit.
Yeah,
what the fuck, Nestle Rabbit?
Most of these people...
We thought you were the good guy.
...that we're looking at here have never even seen a chocolate bar. They actually literally... I think some guy on YouTube went to one of these countries and actually had a chocolate bar and said, you guys want to taste what chocolate tastes like when it's been refined and obviously a chocolate product. And they were, like, amazed. They were like, wow, this is what this makes? Because obviously they're making 50 cents a day, 84 cents a day, which the World Bank...
You can't eat this shit raw, so...
I mean, you can make a drink out of it. I've seen people do that, but there's almost no nutritional value at this raw level. So last year, or 2018... the profits for Nestle were in Swiss francs, 10.46 billion. It's nearly the same in the U.S. It's $10,521,780,135.59.
Ooh.
Child slave labor.
See,
sure
why are they allowed to do that,
taste
though?
Good.
Like, what other company is allowed to, like, have the government step in and they go, oh, you know, I don't know where 50% of these TVs even came from. You know what I mean? Like, who's allowed to walk with that? Like, why...
Nestle.
Why is that anybody else's problem but Nestle's? Why don't you source your fucking cocoa better?
They can't. They literally don't even know where half of it comes from.
What is this profiting from water thing? Is that just from selling bottled water?
Yes. So that's the next image we have. I don't want. I mean, people have heard a lot more about. Can you pull that up, TJ?
Which one?
The next picture.
This one here.
Well, you got to take the fucking video down.
Oh, the video's up.
There you go.
So in the face of a historic drought, Nestle is bottling California water for profit. Say no to Nestle brand water. So this is some really fucked up shit, dude. In most of these places, Nestle pays virtually nothing, or they pay like a permit fee of $200. So what they actually do, here's their plan. They find economically distressed areas, and they say, hey, we're going to build a factory here. We're going to sell products here. We're going to provide a lot of jobs for this community. But in turn, we're going to take all your natural resources, so in this case, water, and sell it back to people for a premium.
Right.
And if they say, oh, we want a better deal, we want you guys to pay more taxes, they say, well, we'll just shut up the factory and we'll leave. So, of course, someone's going to want these jobs in these areas. In Michigan and towns near Flint,
Michigan. So they basically give people jobs just to hold them hostage for the resources of the town.
Yes. Oh, yeah, and they pay virtually nothing. Uh-huh. And some rates, the best thing they pay is municipal tap water. So they basically put tap water into a bottle of water and you buy it.
Look at how fucking like adept they are at selling water to different people. Ozarka. I wonder who that's aimed at.
Oh, that's from Texas. Yep.
Yep. Deer Park for the hunter.
We have an Ozarka in
Ice Mountain for the climber. You know what I mean? What the fuck,
well, they
dude?
Actually do with a lot of these brands is they bought existing brands right. for the different parts of the U.S. They just kept it because people recognize the brand. They go, right. Ozarka, I've always bought that shit.
Yep, I'll just keep getting it, but now it's a Nestle product.
And it's just crazy that they fucking basically pay nothing for this. They basically sell you tap water. They go to aquifers, they pump all the water. In the California, that was a big controversy. It was in a massive drought, and Nestle's pumping a bunch of groundwater out to sell it as a premium back to people.
Of course.
You know, and this is this happens all over North America. I mean, like I talk about Flint, Michigan, obviously the corroded pipes, they fucking start taking it from the, I think it's the Flint River or whatever it is, or the river near Flint. And at the same time, they're giving people Nestle bottled water. It's just astonishing. It's astonishing what this company has done. That's basically that's the section on that. So the next thing we're going to talk about is Bayer, TJ.
Dude, aspirin?
Aspirin,
come
Paul.
Come on, man. They make aspirin.
There ain't nothing wrong with no aspirin. What has Bayer done wrong?
Dude, they're the best kind of aspirin, too.
By the way, also as of recently, the owner of Monsanto, another beloved American company.
Yeah. Love it.
Love Monsanto. So
you might recognize Bayer as the maker of aspirin, as you did, Paul.
I did.
They're one of the world's top pharmaceutical companies. In 1984, they discovered they had a little problem, Paul. They discovered that one of the products they were selling, a medicine to induce blood clotting, was infecting people with HIV.
Oops!
Can you believe that?
That was, look, whoopsie daisy.
So you guys know what Bayer did. They said, look, guys, we can't fucking sell this product. Stop selling it. Can you go to the next image, TJ, please? They did what any responsible company would do, right? They said, no more. So they stopped marketing it and developed a safer medicine right before exporting all the contaminated medicine to Asia and Latin America, where it continued to be sold.
Oh, my God. This is
stop selling this medicine
stop
to white people.
Yeah, stop selling this to white people. Jesus Christ. We don't want white people to get AIDS.
Wow.
Of course.
What a company.
They even continued making the HIV-infected medicine for a few months because it was cheaper than producing the new version.
Yeah.
Which was sold straight to developing countries.
But I'm sure not many people died, right?
Of course not. 6,000 people in the U.S. were known to have contracted HIV and AIDS from the medicine. But how many people died from the obtained overseas medicine? At least 100,000 units of the medication made their way to Asia and Argentina after Bayer stopped selling in America. Ooh, 100,000 units
were
sold.
How the fuck do you make a pill that gives people AIDS?
Yeah, that's what I want to know.
Like, what the fuck?
I don't even know how you accidentally do that. That's a virus.
They did it somehow, I guess.
They put a virus in the pill?
I'm
assuming that it was had contaminated blood or something with it. I'm not exactly sure how it did.
What the fuck were you using to make this?
I don't know exactly what
Bayer's up to some weird witch doctor shit.
In 2019, Bayer and Johnson & Johnson, who market Xarelto together, can you pull the next image, CJ?
Xarelto.
Settled around 25,000 lawsuits on the blood-thinning drug Xarelto.
What happened?
Did
it give them AIDS?
By agreeing to disperse $775 million to federal and state plaintiffs who said the company said not properly warn patients about possible fatal bleeding as a result of ingesting the drug.
Oops.
Oh, God, guys. You might it might thin your blood so much you might actually die. Oh, well, wow. We neglected to tell you that and prescribed it to you. Of course, the doctors, of course,
fantastic.
Were implicated in this as well, but the company didn't care. They made a lot of money. They made billions, so they gave you a paltry. I mean, it's a great business model. Think about
it. Yeah, you make, I make billions off of a fucking product that kills people. Then you get sued, and you pay millions
back.
And you get to keep most of the profit still.
Dude, somebody seems to have the better end of that deal.
I wonder who it is.
Who is it?
Of course, there was no admission of liability from the companies in the settlement. As they noted, they had prevailed in six previous trials. The settlement will be divided evenly among between the companies. So they actually had won lawsuits. Like, you didn't warn us. It's like, well, there's a risk. Sorry, you're dead, or you're fucking, you're not, you're dead, or sorry, your grandfather's dead.
Should have read the fine print.
So that's a pretty bad company, huh, TJ?
Yeah. That's a pretty awful company.
How about American CyanMid Company?
I never heard of
that. That sounds like a Bond villain company.
It's actually a real company.
American CyanMid Enterprises.
In the 4 years between 1996 and 2000, companies in the U.S. exported a little over a billion pounds of chemical pesticides to third world countries. It's not really a big deal, but this is. Most of those pesticides were banned in the U.S. because they have known carcinogens in them. But hey, guys, there's a loophole. Don't worry. It's legal to manufacture and export them as long as they're not being used in the good old U.S. of A.
CyanMid.
Once again, it's okay. We'll just, okay, well, this is dangerous. Too dangerous for U.S. consumers. Export it somewhere else.
Sell it to some other fucking bum somewhere else, as long as they're not good on fashion.
Yeah, that's just part
Americans.
Of doing business, though. The regulations are different in different places.
Hey, you know, we can't control what other countries regulate. As a result, over 350 million agricultural workers in areas like Africa and Central America are put into contact with these chemicals only through another loophole. They're not told about the small factor that without proper gear, they have a very good chance of dying.
What about the thousands of people from
those... So weird how these other countries don't trust us, man.
I don't know why.
What about the thousands of people from those communities who are employed gainfully making the products that the company CyanMid makes, sir? Are you
going to
talk about that? Are you going to talk about those people whose lives are enriched by this company? I don't think so, sir. You're here with an agenda. And listen, we here at CyanMid are proud of our products. We sell according to the local laws of every jurisdiction.
You follow all laws.
We follow every law to the T. We pay our taxes here, sir. And I don't understand why you would think we were evil.
I have no idea. Maybe the 350 million agricultural workers who are affected by your products. I don't know. That might
affected
be why.
Positively by the extra work that we give them, sir? Oh, how do you explain that away?
Yeah.
How do you explain that away?
The extra work
that we provide these people that barely have work.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, we're a horrible company, yes.
Yeah, but we make a lot of money, so we'll just, when people start feeling guilty, we'll just flash all the money we made them, and they'll go, you know what, maybe it ain't so bad. Did they kill anyone in America? Nah. Do we really know those people overseas anyways? So you end up with a situation like the plantation in Costa Rica that was sold a pesticide called Counter by American CyanMid Company. A quick fact about the Counter, the chemical is known to contain a compound known as organophosphate.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they used to make nerve gas for World War II. Counter is only approved for handling if you're wearing gloves, a face mask, and eye protection. The uninformed Costa Rican farmers, on the other hand, work shirtless and spread the pesticide with their bare hands. Some of them even use full bags of Counter as pillows at night. So it looked multi-purpose, you're right. After a few days, the workers were literally vomiting blood and foaming at the mouth from the toxins they had worked into their bodies. And it's still happening today. Companies like American CyanMid and Chevron Chemical Company export about 10 million pounds of these chemicals out of our country each month.
A truly tragic occurrence that... I will tell you could have been avoided by following the clear labeling on the package of all CyanMid products. You know, it says nowhere on that product to use it as a pillow, and it says nowhere on that product to rub it on your skin.
Wow.
So these people, you know,
I mean,
while tragic,
they were simply
I don't see how you can blame the product.
I mean, I understand that these people are, like, poor farmers in Costa Rica and shit, but, like, wow, I mean, to just take pesticide and spread it with your bare hands
mix
and then
a little
use a
this.
Bag of pesticide as a pillow. I mean, like, you know it's poison, right?
Give me a
That's
shot of that
That's why you're putting
pesticide.
It on the fucking... It's meant to kill things, so why would you think, like, this is perfectly safe?
You want a little scotch of pesticide with your buffalo milk tonight? Sure, brother. Throw a shot of that pesticide in there. Hey, let me go over to my pesticide pillow. Take a nap.
I don't mean to.
I'm tired.
I know I'm showing some Western privilege here at this point. But
white
Jesus.
Privilege.
No, I
Western
get it.
Privilege.
You know, but maybe they've just, you know, you got to understand. The reason I know pesticide is dangerous is because, like, there was shit written on the bag that said it. If they can't read English.
Yeah.
Was it printed in their language?
Probably not.
Because if it was printed in their language, don't handle this, and they fucking rubbed it on their skin, I got to side with Cyanamid here. If you read that and you drank it and used it as a pillow, then
My understanding was that they knew that it was dangerous to people.
Okay.
And they just sold it because and they never informed these people there was anything wrong with it. They said, "Oh, it's fine. It's a good pesticide. Whatever." And like I said, it's very easy for these companies to say, "Shit, we can't sell it here anymore. Why not sell it overseas where there's no regulations?"
I just like playing black PR for these companies.
Oh, and a beautiful thing is too, and that's actually this is actually an image of one of their company swimming pools. Look at people.
Look at how happy the people are. These people that work for the company.
Yes, those are people that work for the company. See that
big Cyanamid factory in the background.
Look at them.
They had a company swimming pool. How bad of a company can they actually be, Paul? Look, they're having a company picnic.
Look like a bunch of great fellas to me.
Ain't nothing wrong with Cyanamid. What are you talking about?
And if I might say, some foxy Cyanamid dames.
Hopefully some eligible bachelors there and some...
Ha-cha-cha, honey. Welcome to the company.
Guys, it's not all bad news. What about helping people get pain relief? There's nothing wrong with that, is there? Trying to relieve suffering?
Absolutely not.
100% not. I would say so as well.
I would say that those are the peacemakers.
Play the next intro there,
the
TJ.
The healers of the world.
Next video, please.
Next video.
Purdue Pharma.
There's no question that our best, strongest pain medicines are the opioids, but these are the same drugs that have a reputation for causing addiction and other terrible things. Now, in fact, the rate of addiction amongst pain patients who are treated by doctors is much less than 1%. They don't wear out, they go on working, they do not have serious medical side effects, and so these drugs, which I repeat, are our best, strongest pain medications, should be used much more than they are for patients in pain.
There you have it. Not addictive, and the best medications we can possibly prescribe to people.
That sounds pretty awesome.
I mean, yeah. I mean, look, on the surface of it, that's great. So you guys might have heard of Purdue Pharma. Can you pull up the next image, please, TJ?
I don't want to.
Why not?
I don't want to, Scotty.
You don't want to?
This one?
Yes, that one right there.
Good Purdue. Old OxyContin. Hillbilly heroin.
Makes some medications you guys know and love. Oxycodone, fentanyl, codeine, hydrocodone.
All the good stuff.
OxyContin, of course, featured here. It is widely known for production of drugs such as MS cotton, OxyContin, and Ryzolt. In 1972, cotton, a controlled drug release system, was developed. In 1984, its extended release for formation of morphine, MS cotton, was released. And in 1996, its extended release formulation of oxycodone, OxyContin, was released.
Which one was Rush Limbaugh addicted to?
I think
OxyContin.
I believe it was actually the OxyContin. Also Valium, muscle relaxer. He was there too long.
He had boner pills, too.
Oh, Viagra. You know what? Got to get that blood flow up.
Yeah. He had some boner pills.
The controversy behind the company emerged as a result of the drugs that they had made and how they carried high potential for addiction. The most commonly abused medications from the company produces are MS-Cotton and OxyContin. Both can be abused by crushing, chewing, snorting, or injecting the dissolved product.
Awesome.
I mean, but, you know, you have to have different ways of delivering your pain medicine, of course. I mean, you can't just have one way. I mean, someone might not feel comfortable taking a horse pill while they just put it in their arm or snort it. What's so bad about that, right, guys? The ingestion methods create a significant risk to the abuser. They can result in overdose and death. Oh, well, I mean, that's a slight rub.
Too bad that didn't happen with Rush Limbaugh.
I mean, yeah, well, you can't get everything in life, can you?
I guess not.
Drug-seeking tactics that addicts undergo to obtain medications include doctor shopping, which is basically you go around a bunch of doctors saying, my neck hurts, my shoulder hurts, I've slipped, I fell.
Until you just go to a bunch of doctors.
And you get a bunch of doctors to write you legitimate prescriptions, and then you, of course, I actually knew a guy. I only met him a couple times. He basically ran a scam. He had a deal with these used car lots where he would take the car, and you have a check engine light, right? He'd burn out the check engine light for them to help him sell the cars to suckers.
Right.
He had a 90-day supply of OxyContin from three different doctors. He took about three of them a day at least. The guy was fucking, just like loopy out of his mind. And at that time, this was before that you got a bunch of media attention, it was possible to do that. I mean, it's much harder now.
Well, there were literally like pain clinics all over the place. There still are in some places. where you could just like walk in there and pay a doctor some money and fill out a little form that says you got this kind of pain or that kind of pain and walk out with a big bag of fucking Oxy.
And the fucked up
thing. It was like legitimized dealing of this to a community that it was destroying. So like I don't really fault this company for creating a really strong fucking pain medication because there are some people that need this type
yes,
of shit.
Yes, of course, 100%.
What I fault this company for doing is flooding the market with it when they know it's all hitting the street and being abused by everybody. They have control over the production of their own fucking drugs.
Well, there's basically this big lie that
they
Purdue
could work
told.
With hospitals and doctors to ensure that the people that get this fucking drug are the people that absolutely need it. And they look the other way because they get more money by flooding the market with it.
Well, there was a letter in the 1980s that it was widely cited by the FDA and others, and, of course, the pharmaceutical reps that, and you heard it in the intro to this, was that it's addictive in less than 1% of cases. So people that take this are virtually never going to get addicted. It's 1% of people, which they, and internally they knew that was not true at all. This company knew this was a total fabrication. It was not in any way true. So OxyContin, introduced in 1985, was Purdue Pharma's breakthrough palliative for chronic pain. And like you said, there are people that have legitimate uses for these drugs. There's people that have cancer and other like wasting diseases that this is, makes their life bearable. So it's not like this is all bad. We're not here to say hey, there's no legitimate medical use for this product. There is. It's just that a lot of times it's actually not used for legitimate purposes. Can you pull up the next picture, TJ?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I guess you're too far in. All right, I was too far in. This is Arthur Sackler, one of the richest people in America, by the
Sackler.
Way. I'm not sure if he's still alive, but at the time he was.
What's that Sackler hanging below his chin?
Hey, I guess if you have billions of dollars, it doesn't really matter if you have a sack under your chin.
I guess that's true.
So he developed the marketing strategy for this. He pioneered decades earlier. The company aggressively pressed doctors to prescribe the drug.
What's this dude's name?
Arthur Sackler.
Arthur Sackler.
A sack under his neck. Dude, he's great. So this was his strategy. Yeah, they get doctors to prescribe the drugs, basically wooing them with free trips to pain management seminars and paid speaking engagements.
He's dead.
Sales fucking soared. The drug was marketed as smooth and sustained pain control all day and all night.
Smooth.
When taken on a 12-hour schedule and as having lower abuse potential than immediate-release oxycodone because of its time-release properties, even though there was no scientific evidence backing that conclusion.
So what?
Just a minor detail
what
there.
What is science, no.
Claims made with
Pish
no evidence.
Posh, dude.
In the early years, Purdue Pharma was aware of OxyContin abuse, including reports that pills were being crushed and snorted, stolen from pharmacies, and some doctors were being charged with selling prescriptions. According to the New York Times, based on a confidential Justice Department report.
The failing New York Times, Scotty?
Yes, the failing New York Times.
Gotcha.
Based on a confidential Justice Department report that was revealed in May 2018, over 100 internal company memos between 1997 in 1999 included the words street value, crush, or snort.
Why do companies even write about this shit to one another?
Because they have to talk about it. They have to have strategies of like, that was like a PR memo, basically. It's like, how do
but
we deal
mean,
with people saying
it seems like
this?
The best PR would be
how
like,
we
were completely
we're
unaware of any of this happening.
Because they're not. They 100% know. They are 100% guilty.
How do
it's
we
all,
cover
it's all about
our
how do you know that if there's no memos that say that shit and all that?
Well, I mean, I get what you're saying.
They have
but
to talk internally about this
they
shit.
They have to, yeah. It's like, you know.
If you know one thing in a business that's big enough, you have to send fucking memos to other people that are in the know.
Well, it's legal liability, too. If they say they have no idea what's going on and it turns out that a bunch of employees are under subpoena and say, yes, of course we know, it's not going to matter anyways.
Right.
They have to look at their legal liability.
Too big to fail.
So OxyContin had become a blockbuster drug. Purdue had increased its earnings from a few billion in 2007. To $31 billion by 2016.
Cool.
Seems like it worked.
About bloody time.
That had increased to $35 billion by 2017.
Arthur Sackler.
According to a 2017 article in the New Yorker, Purdue Pharma is
I think
owned,
that sack is filled with money.
Is owned by one of the richest America's richest families with a collective net worth of $13 billion.
Cool.
And if you're worried, like what Purdue Pharma is up to now, they basically patented a new form of binofarin. Which controls cravings and is used to treat addiction to opioids such as OxyContin.
Oh, thank God.
Oh, wow.
They get them coming and they get them going, too. You got to love that. You gotta get,
we cause the problem, well, we're also the solution.
And it was interesting because I went to found a video online.
You know, I don't normally quote the Bible, but I actually, this got me thinking about a fucking Bible quote that I think most of us know at least part of. 1 Timothy 6:10, for the love of money is the root of all evil. which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows.
Well, there you go. I don't think that's been true. Look at this dude. He's holding fucking King Tut's goblet.
I don't think he's the one experiencing the many sorrows.
Yeah, I think you're talking about the public.
Pierce themselves through.
I think that you could probably lay some of the fault of this at the collective of society that thinks this sort of
Well,
fucking,
the medical industry, the doctors you know. That were basically being wooed and taken on trips to Hawaii and saying, this drug's great,
Not
it's
to
great.
Mention every idiot that gets suckered into voting for candidates that,
right.
that basically
these
propagate this kind of thing and say, like, these are the great men of society, these are the job creators of society, this is
the industrialist, you know.
Yeah, this is the fucking important business magnet that everyone should fucking look up to and revere.
You know what was interesting? It was when I was doing research for this video, I found that they're recommending, they said there's different therapies to deal with opioid addiction, and the one they recommended was the one made by Purdue Pharma, and it was like at the National Center for like Health like Addiction or something. It's just interesting. So even when people are addicted, they have a product to sell them. It fucking blows your mind.
Wow.
So let's talk about the damage from this. TJ, can you put the next video, please?
Mm-hmm.
Legal drugs are killing people in this country. Today, 116 people will die from opioids. 116 people
Purdue Pharma rep.
Walk me through it. How does a company put out a drug without fully knowing and letting people know?
How much money did this company make, Purdue Pharma?
$31 billion.
So yep. Does like a decent haircut cost $32 billion?
Yeah.
Or?
I don't know what she's got. Let's hear if
What's
she's got
going
a good,
on?
Good argument.
How addictive it is.
Well, the FDA allowed them, when they introduced it in 1996, to make this kind of squishy claim that it...
Oh, so this is not a Purdue Pharma person. This is an author of... Yeah. Scotty lied to us.
Okay, maybe I got that confused.
You're stupid, Scotty. You made me look bad.
I thought she actually worked for the company
at some
point,
but
maybe she just researched it. My bad.
All right, she wrote a book called Dope Sick, and she's about to tell us all this fucking bullshit.
It was believed...
And I don't think Dope Sick made $31 billion.
No, to reduce... the risk of addiction because of its time release mechanism. And
why is this bitch here lecturing about drugs when she's obviously on drugs herself?
Oh, she's clearly taking the pills right now.
That squishy claim then became made into this truth that was sort of repeated and exaggerated, as I say in the book, like a game of telephone gone terribly awry. And Purdue sent its
Quote
reps out across
book.
The country. They particularly targeted.
What's that, Paul?
She quoted her own book.
Yeah. As I said in the book I wrote.
That I want you to buy. Well, of course, she has an incentive as well.
Yeah,
a game of telephone gone terribly awry is your best fucking quote that you wanted to drop from that book?
A game of telephone gone terribly awry.
Where do I get this book?
You got to get this book now.
Available on Amazon.
Areas where they're competitive opioids, which were lower dose largely. They were immediate release drugs, were already being marketed. So that's why this opioid epidemic was seeded in rural distressed communities where there were already lots of workplace injuries and actually closing coal mines and things like that. And so in those communities, it started so much earlier than it did in the rest of the country.
Which is
and
why
these-
those places are the epicenters of the opioid epidemic. Places like Ohio with all those factories closing, places like West Virginia where there's no jobs and people are like I said, the coal mines are closing. People are already injured. Their bodies are already breaking down. And guess what? Here's the bomb for it.
Turn them all into dope fiends.
And the great thing was is that everyone's complicit. The doctors are complicit. The insurance company is complicit because they want to fucking they want to make sure these people can get their medicine. So they're getting money at the end of it. It's just a big, giant fucking circle jerk. It's a giant scam that enriches this company, and everyone along the way gets to play a middleman. Yeah, I'm the pharmacy.
Maybe they should have put you on MSNBC,
Scotty. You think the fucking pharmacies that were filling these prescriptions weren't going, maybe there's a problem here. There's people trying to break in and steal this shit. Yeah, I wonder.
Let's take a look at this statistic here. Are you ready to move past
Yeah,
this?
Let's move past
Let's
this.
Do.
Because check this out. This is, I think Scotty articulated it better than this bitch who apparently
So let's
wrote
look at
book.
1999. 16,849 total overdose deaths. It's obviously distributed between male and female. By 2017, 70,000.
Looks like the man and the woman line were pretty, I mean, like, they're both going up, but the woman line goes up pretty evenly. The man line.
We love us.
Looks like we got ourselves a sharp spike in recent, fucking years here.
We love our OD
in 2018. I actually read this when I was doing my research. It was actually the first year that that number had gone down.
Okay, so maybe it's stabilizing a little bit. Or
it was about 68,000 deaths from overdosing.
So it went a little bit down in 2018.
Well, I think there's finally people, you know, I mean, there's finally real action on this and realizing, like, wow, almost 100,000. I mean, like, we're talking about gun deaths in America, but 70,000 people are just taking too much of a fucking drug and dying. It's insane. It's fucking honestly insane. And all these companies made billions of dollars. And now, you know what the Purdue farmer's going to do now, TJ?
And now they get to profit off the recovery.
They get to file for bankruptcy. And just get to go, oh, the we dude, didn't know.
The dude that started this scam was literally holding the goblet of Tutankhamun in his hand. Dude, that's the level of excess we're talking about here. It's not just he got rich off of this.
He got $13 billion rich.
He got he was a multi-billionaire off of this shit. And there's not a giant uprising in this country against these fucking corporations that are literally poisoning us to death and charging us for the fucking, you know,
they should start selling OxyContin in Asia and Africa
now. How many people do you guys think have a full-fledged, just means you're totally addicted to these drugs, like you can't live without them, all your life is about opioids or fentanyl or heroin or whatever.
So like in America?
In America, how many people think are addicted to these drugs? Well, we take the majority. We take about 80 to 90% of these drugs in the world.
I mean, if 70,000 people are dying from it, there's got to be like millions. A couple hundred thousand, maybe half a million.
I'm thinking in the millions. I'm thinking like 1.5, 2 million people.
1.9 million people.
Jesus.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And that's not talking about people just abusing drugs. This is people that
are
addicts.
Total,
yeah, on the fucking
That's not
street.
Everyone who's even just taking it. That's addicts, right?
Yes. Full-fledged addiction is what it's called. Full-fledged, like, this is your life.
A country with 2 million fucking addicts to
68,000.
A substance that was peddled to them by a corporation that has suffered no repercussions.
Yeah. And said, less than 1% of people will get addicted to this drug. Less than 1%. Less than 1%. Here's the 1%. Here's what you get with that. 70,000 people
well,
dead.
Well, hey, you know what?
68,000 people dead.
Let me tell you something, Scotty. They didn't lie. Because this country has, what, 300 million people in it?
Yeah.
And about 2 million addicts, so that's less than 1%.
Oh, that's great.
So they told the truth, Scotty.
Damn.
Yeah, there you go. They told the fucking truth.
Technically,
except,
they told
except
the truth.
Not all people in America are users of the drug, TJ.
Right.
That's where your logic fails. Then.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely more. Yeah, if 2 million people are addicted now, that means definitely more than 1% got addicted.
So we have some more numbers. Someone's trying to call me. More than one out of three average Americans used a prescription opioid painkiller in 2015, despite growing concerns these medicines are promoting a widespread addiction and overdose deaths. Oh well. Keep giving people these drugs. Nearly 92 million U.S. adults, or about 38% of the population, took a legitimately prescribed opioid like Oxycontin or Percocet in 2015. So, I mean, the numbers have gone down here, but they're, I mean, 92 million fucking U.S. adults.
That's a pretty fucking evil company.
I mean, and it's virtually ever. I mean, that means almost...
It's literally like poisoning the populace, then selling the antidote back to them.
Yeah.
That's what they actually said. That's actually a doctor said this. The proportion of adults who receive these medications any year seems startling to me, said... this is some of the study we got these numbers from. Said study co-author Dr. Wilson Compton, deputy director of the U.S. National Institute on Drug Abuse. It's an awful lot of people who take these, mostly for medical purposes, but within that is a significant percentage who end up misusing them, he added. The survey found that 11.5 million people, or nearly 5% of the population, misuse prescription opioids they obtained through illicit means.
Wow.
So like I said, so if we look at that number, 0.8% of Americans reported a full-fledged addiction, but we have 11.5 million people that just use it recreationally or get fucked up with it. I mean, so that gives you the breadth of this problem.
What do you think the addicts used to be? Like, that's the problem here. It's not that, you know, there's this great percentage of people necessarily fucking full-blown addicts. It's that there's a bigger percentage of people that have just fucked around on this shit. And that's where all these addicts started.
And they get cut off, too. And here's Skid Row in L.A. You can kind of see the death toll and the damage it's done. There's people. And by most reports, you guys know how many people roughly live in this area of L.A.?
Oh, it's like... What, like 20 million or some shit? It's
not 20 million.
We're talking like an absurd number.
About 50,000.
No, I thought you meant L.A. and
oh, no, no, in Skid Row. Okay. In Skid Row.
Okay, no.
50,000.
Dude, so much of fucking L.A. is Skid Row, though. I mean, this is horrible that there's 50,000 people living here, but every underpass you drive through in downtown L.A. is another one of these little tent cities.
That's because them damn liberal politics.
And virtually everyone in these 10 cities you're talking about are addicted to drugs, and the drug of choice now in the U.S. are opioids, they're heroin, they're fentanyl, they're other things. They're drugs that basically kill pain and give you euphoric effects, because that's the only, I mean, look where they live.
Yeah. Downtown San Francisco has a similar problem.
Seattle, Vancouver.
Seattle. Any large metropolitan fucking city you go into, the downtown area tends to be a haven for people to set up cities like this.
Oh, New Orleans. We were down there this weekend. We saw tons of people who were addicted
to
heroin.
People who want to... I know there's a lot of conservatives who like to use this kind of shit as a talking point. But you know what? This shit is all over the rural areas of America, too.
That's where it started.
It's just people, instead of these living in tent cities, they're just living in dilapidated fucking ramshackle houses.
Yeah, dude, here's a counter to that.
That have been...
OxyContin alone almost decimated the entire fucking Ozark mountain range worth of people.
Right.
Yes. That whole fucking area was eaten alive by that drug. Absolutely their towns that were filled with people that now have nobody in them.
What about West Virginia, one of the most conservative states in America?
That whole fucking area of the world... staunchly, usually Rust Belt conservatism decimated by this.
Ohio is a very conservative state. It's one of the epicenters of the opioid addiction. It's fucking insane.
So
this isn't a fucking liberal issue.
Yeah, this isn't
a conservative issue.
This isn't
a
partisan issue.
This is a fucking medical fucking industry gone wild.
Fuck that. It is a partisan issue because politicians, really on both sides of the aisle, but more on one, have been extremely fucking kind to these industries.
Of course.
Have taken massive amounts of money from these industries.
Yep.
Have passed legislation favorable to these industries.
Yep.
Have opposed regulation of these industries.
At all turns.
At every fucking turn.
Not Bernie, though.
No, not
Bernie. I will
Bernie.
Say that for Bernie.
No, he's been a fucking huge... opponent
this
of the
is the
fucking
end
pharmaceutical
result.
Industry.
This is the end result of people like this. This
unhypocritically,
is one image.
By the way.
This is just one image. And we talked about other places in the U.S., but this is just one fucking way to look at this. Like, this is what the end of all this suffering, all this fucking shit that they've done to the people. This is how they profit. They get to fucking live, as Paul said, go back to fucking Arthur Sackler there. Let's see how he lived his fucking life.
He's got the goblet of Amun-Ra in his hand.
This is how he lived his life.
This dude's got fucking, like, probably...
ancient artifacts.
The art that he's sitting with at this table is probably more than your average fucking person that takes this drug ever sees in a lifetime.
More than likely, yes.
Because he sold this horrible, poisonous, addictive drug and flooded encouraged doctors to overprescribe.
Yeah, he came up with a marketing strategy, and he used his psychiatric knowledge to market these pharmaceuticals.
I mean, it really didn't take that fucking much It's the fucking greed principle at work. Mm-hmm. Sprinkle the money down on people and find out how much money it takes to get people to shut their mouths.
He was actually not a billionaire, by the way. His net worth was $140 million at the time of his death.
Well, when did he die?
He died in 1987.
What's that adjusted for inflation?
It's probably not over a billion.
Well, it's probably a few hundred million.
His family was worth it.
It's considerably more than 140
Until the scandal came out, TJ, 8 family members of the Sackler family sat on the board of Purdue Pharma.
Absolutely.
Right, so that money just got transferred up and up and up and up and
yes.
up.
Yes.
This family basically devastated and killed hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Americans.
So let's revisit.
But made a lot of money.
In the light of the stuff that Sky has prevented, let's revisit the idea of... the concept of evil and whether or not it's useful.
That's right. Kind of how I want to end. Do you think you guys think these companies are evil?
No. I don't think
I don't think so either. I think that, honestly, if you look at it from the most pragmatic perspective, it's all about just greed. It's all about just making money.
When I see...
And they don't care who suffers because they're not going to see them. You think that fucking Arthur Sackler was hanging around with people in Skid Row? No. He was living the high life.
I mean, don't you have to say that, you know, if we're going to say Nestle's evil, then when I chug down the fucking Nesquik, I'm complicit in that evil,
right?
Of course.
When
doctor that prescribes a fucking Bayer drug or a fucking Purdue Pharma drug.
Even
is
if
evil.
It's not you, you're probably
we're all
that.
In this together, right? So, I mean, like,
right.
Really, especially when it comes to these corporations and how we choose to regulate or not regulate them to whatever extent we have power in the system, which, you know, we can argue about that forever. But
I mean,
like, this doesn't happen.
That's at the heart of this argument.
If the entire populace of this country looked at this and said, "Fuck this shit, we're not going to allow this here," it
of
wouldn't
course.
Be allowed here.
Of course,
it's too uncomfortable to do that. You have to give up things that you like to do that. You have to admit your complicity.
But that's
in the
what I'm saying. We've
that,
we've all
that's a hard
so
thing to do.
So we've all made that bargain with the devil. So I mean, if you're going to say that this is evil, then you have to say, well, it's an evil that I'm part of. I'm part of this evil. I'm complicit in this evil.
And how much choice
I may not
do
be
you
a,
really
a
have?
Fucking
I mean, look
big
at the
player in it. But
look at the list of fucking companies and sub companies that some of these evil corporations own. Like, how do you realistically live your life and avoid every last fucking taint that they've...
You really... It'd be
you know what I mean? If you're,
it'd be impossible.
We would collectively have to decide to do
I
that.
I think that the better position to take then is to stop the easy label of evil because it allows people, even us, doing a show about evil corporations. At the end of it, if we weren't having this conversation, a lot of people might just go like, oh yeah, Nestle sucks. And then not even, you know...
No, you suck.
No,
we suck.
We all suck.
Right. As a collective, this society fucking sucks.
It is a failing of our culture.
Right.
It is a failing of and it's a global thing. It's you see these poor countries being exploited. You see people being exploited, and every turn it just seems like it's just from the top down.
And you can make some arguments for this. My argument is, what's the beating heart of this? It's capitalism.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Capitalism drives this type of hyper competitive, hyper exploitative company. It feeds it. It's become a beast in our society that's undermined our very fucking democracy.
Well, it's all because if you have personal enrichment, if Paul gets to the top of the heap, it's great. Because you know what? Even though, yeah, it is unfortunate, you were smarter. It was a meritocracy. You just did better, Paul.
Right.
These people in Costa Rica that were handling poison, you know what? They should have read the fucking bag. They should have fucking known there was poison. They should have had a better job.
If you don't address the fundamentally poisonous idea that allows these types of like vampire companies to exist, and not only exist but thrive by bribing public officials, then how are you ever going to fucking address the issue? How are you ever going to take a hard look at the issue and not look at the cause of it? And the root of it, in my opinion, is this fucking capitalistic idea that money is the pinnacle of fucking human achievement, and the accumulation of it, you really can do no wrong. The higher up that pyramid you go, the more shielded you are from criticism.
And
so you can literally have a company that poisons 2 million people and then sells the fucking antidote back to them.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a homeless guy and you steal a pizza, you're probably going to go to prison for a few years.
Well, you can have a company that sells little chocolate bars with bunnies on it.
How about this?
That were picked by little African children who are starving to death.
How did you get here today, Paul? You came in a car,
in
right?
In a car, of course.
What'd you put in that car? And what did you put in that car? You put gasoline.
Of course I did.
And when the Deepwater Horizon came, was BP is, I'll never buy gas from BP again. But why do you think they were out there? They were out there because they wanted your fucking goddamn dollars. That's what they wanted. They wanted to reach in your pocket because you're saying, you know what? I want a Big Mac. How can I get it? Ooh, money.
If we don't address the root of the fucking issue, then, you know, what? We're all complicit if they're evil.
Yeah, so stop saying the companies are evil. If anyone's evil, we're all fucking evil.
We're the fat pigs eating all the Nestle chocolate that they're making little slave kids pick. You know what I mean?
That's the reality.
We're the idiots taking the poison and then taking the antidote from the same fucking company.
From the same snake oil salesman.
Right.
It's beautiful, isn't it? Especially for them. They just get to come into town, rob everyone blind, and declare bankruptcy and sell you the antidote back. Someone else buys them up, has no legal liability because they didn't do it, and they continue profiting off the suffering of other people. What a great scam we have. But you know what it is? Unless you're in the top of the fucking totem pole, too fucking bad, bitch. Stop whining. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps and become an industrialist. If not, your opinion doesn't fucking matter anyways.
You're not, but you could be.
Maybe.
You're not, but you could be at the top of that pyramid.
You could be.
Maybe. Somehow. Some way. Someday. Maybe someday you'll find yourself at the top of the pyramid of evil where your evil becomes good.
Exactly.
Awesome. Oh, shit. Is that what happens?
You can buy your way to goodness.
Then I take everything I just said back.
The richer
the
you get, the richer you get, the gooder you is, boy.
Of course. All right. That's it for tonight, folks.
And that's our show. Sorry it wasn't long enough. Only an hour and a half when it should have been 10 hours.
Of course.
Fucking crybaby motherfuckers. All right. Peace.
See ya.
See ya next
time. Spend more money for the evil corporations. Give them your money, including this one.
Yeah, we're a corporation. We're trying to be evil. At least evil is
we're
part
on
of
our way to evil.
Yeah.
Help us grow.
Help us become more powerful and more evil by becoming patrons. I'll even tell you what the next episode is about. It's about Jason Voorhees. I'm going to go into a whole history of the fucking character. It's going to be great. You'll see. Check it out.